Now we're going to tell you about a person you may never have heard of, but whose sainthood is a certainty, and the people of Australia are celebrating.
She's a wonderful woman. She was far-seeing. She was well ahead of her time. She's just a magnificent person. So I think it's well and truly deserved, yes.
It's just so good to see, you know, that Mary's finally begun to become a saint. But she was really a saint from the beginning, so it doesn't really matter.
It's official.
Yeah, official. The official, yep. We love it, yep.
They're talking about the canonization on Sunday of Mary MacKillop by the Vatican.
In her amazing life, MacKillop ran afoul of church authorities for her part in exposing a priest suspected of being a pedophile. And victims of more recent cases of child sex abuse say she should become their patron saint.
$7 saint, have a lovely day.
Pilgrims have been converging on the chapel and museum here in Sydney, Australia, all week to celebrate the canonization of a headstrong woman who had no problem confronting authority.
She was very feisty and very tough and tenacious, I like to say about her. She certainly knew how to hold her ground, and she, when there was an important issue on the table, she stood up for the justice of that situation.
She died in 1909, a quintessential Australian saint, according to Sister Monica Cavanaugh. The quiet reverence in the chapel where the faithful come to kneel at Mary MacKillop's tomb and brush their fingers lightly over her portrait is in sharp contrast to the controversy over her life. She was excommunicated from the church in the 1870s, a punishment for her part in exposing that priest as a pedophile and raising wider concerns about child molestation by members of the priesthood.
She was persecuted for blowing the whistle on an abusive priest in the 1800s.
Carol Nielsen's son was allegedly a victim of child sex abuse at a Catholic boarding school in rural New South Wales and sees Mary MacKillop as a heroine as much as a saint.
In a way, it's a godsend. It's a person that we can look to, a saint that Catholics can look to and rally behind to look for the justice and the compassion that the church should be showing now. And I think victims all around the world are going to be claiming St. Mary MacKillop as the patron saint of people who have been abused by priests.
It's an issue straight out of the headlines of today, in the spirit and canonization of a woman who took on the church a century ago. After this Sunday, St. Mary MacKillop.
But let's take a look at that question of why St. Mary MacKillop is going to become a saint this weekend. Here to kind of demystify the process, this very mystical process, we're joined by Kenneth Woodward, a contributing editor of Newsweek, where he was a religion editor for 38 years, also author of Making Saints, How the Catholic Church Determines Who Becomes a Saint, Who Doesn't, and Why. Good morning, Kenneth.
Morning.
Well, you just heard that woman saying she feels like Mary MacKillop should become the patron saint of people who've been victimized by pedophile priests. I can't imagine that being the title on the press release coming out of the Vatican, though.
Yeah, well, it's an exaggeration anyhow. The woman really didn't have a role in that. I mean, she was 1,000 miles away when some of her nuns heard about a priest abusing kids and took it to the authorities. And because he had friends in high places, they persuaded the bishop to come down hard on the order of religious women and to transfer authority and all the rest. And that's where she came into play. So it's a stretch. It's a little like St. Clair, who had visions and you know, lived centuries ago, becoming the patron saint of television.
But it is one of the things many people associate with her. They say she should also be the patron saint of whistleblowers. I'm wondering if this is kind of a tricky area for the Vatican to negotiate.
Well, as I just told you, it isn't, because she really wasn't involved in the process. That's a story that cropped up in the last 2 weeks, and it'll probably go away. But it gave an identity to a woman who follows a particular pattern that I think is more important, which is to say that a lot of the people who are recognized as saints and canonized, which means put it on the list of people recognized as saints, ran afoul of the church authorities in one form or another. It was an easy thing to do. St. Thomas Aquinas did. Dorothy Day in our own time, although she hasn't been canonized. There's been a lot of them, a lot of them have been very feisty people, and the women especially who founded these religious orders. The church was one of the few institutions where a woman could go to it to found a, say, a charitable organization and get support for that and get funds for it and see that it will continue after her death.
So clearly, battling with the church doesn't automatically disqualify you from sainthood, but what qualifies you? What are the absolute essentials? I mean, you have to have a couple miracles to your credit, but what else?
Well, yeah, the miracles are really the latter part of it. Here's what you have to have. When you die, people have to think that you were a saint. They were living around a saint. It begins with the people in a very democratic process. And if that reputation for holiness isn't there, nothing happens. The church only investigates a person's life if people already think that he or she's a saint. So they look into it and said, well, is the evidence there? Or are the stories being mistold, like the one we just heard a little bit about Mary MacKillop? So they investigate, and sometimes, in the case of Mary MacKillop, it must have taken at least 50 years. When they, if it were a modern situation, they would look at your emails. The old days, they looked at letters. They would hold tribunals to talk to people who knew you. So it can take a very long time, and usually does. And after they gather all that material into what looks like a PhD dissertation, I got a bunch of them sitting in the basement of my house, they make a judgment on it. They bring in some consultants. The Pope actually has almost nothing to do with it. He signs off on everything, and so he signs off on this. But only in very rare instances does a Pope get involved. So once they, what are they looking for? They're looking for the certain virtues, faith, hope, charity, prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance, in an extraordinary degree. If a person isn't a martyr, they look for those virtues, and that's what they try to prove in that documentation.
But they're not looking for someone who's perfect, who never questioned
their
faith.
Well, you know, it's true, and it's not a matter of questioning authority. I mean, we have so many authority-less churches today that one with authority people find strange. But no, they don't. They look for those virtues. And sometimes extraordinary faith, creates and always has created tension with the institution of the church. It's bound to be that way. But anyhow, the process. So they once this person is declared heroically virtuous or extraordinarily virtuous, they're called venerable. Then they look for confirmation of that. And they look for a miracle attributed to the intercession of this person.
Kenneth Woodward, a contributing editor for Newsweek, where he was religion editor for 38 years, author of Making Saints. Kenneth, quickly, what will she be the patron saint of?
Well, who knows at this point? This moniker, a whistleblower, could stick despite the facts.
Okay, thanks so much, Kenneth.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.